Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. Today, we're delving into a crucial topic that's been making waves in the industry, Notch's proposed amendments and their impact on originators in the ACH network. Before we navigate the intricacies of these proposed changes, let's first set the stage. The world of ACH transactions has seen remarkable growth and evolution in recent years. As the backbone of electronic payments, ACH transactions have become an integral part of our financial landscape, and originators are the driving force behind these transactions, as they play a pivotal role in ensuring the smooth flow of funds within the ACH network. Joining me today to delve into this very topic is Brian Holbrook, Director of Product Strategy and Integrated Services at LSEG Risk Intelligence, as well as James Wester, Director of Digital Assets and Crypto and Co-Head of Payments at Javelin Strategy and Research. In today's episode, they're going to dissect the proposed amendments put forth, which are set to have a direct impact on originators, presenting both challenges as well as opportunities. But first, let's understand the current landscape and the significance of originators in the ACH network. Brian, can you give us an overview of the current landscape?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me today. So when we look at data coming out of Notcha, we can see that the B2B volume increases across ACH are up nearly 10%. We're seeing significant growth across the originator landscape, seeing multiple increases in different verticals, different industries. And of course, with those increases come additional risk. And as we'll talk about today, we see some new rules coming out that are going to have an impact on the whole ecosystem, but particularly on the originator side.
Yeah, no, that's the what's interesting about seeing all of that volume coming through that Brian was talking about is that's very, very consistent across what we're seeing from both the financial services aspect, from that need for basically just for more digital payment volume. That is what we are seeing a lot of. That may sound relatively obvious as we move into especially more digital commerce and digital payments. And yet it's growing at such a rate. I think that that's sometimes a little bit of a surprise is just how that infrastructure for ACH transactions, the use of the ACH network and the need across multiple use cases is growing so very, very quickly. And so expertise in this space is sometimes hard to come by.
Yeah. And if you look at the same day ACH, that's really, really taking off. It's, Notcha is telling us that it's up 20% in Q3 over Q3 last year. So that's pretty significant.
Yeah. And then when you look at that same day, as we began to see that demand for faster and faster settlement times, faster and faster throughput, you know, the other side of that coin is, okay, less and less time to address issues, less and less time to figure things out like fraud, suspicious transactions. So we're moving very, very quickly. Again, I think that surprised everybody in just in terms of how quickly we are beginning to move to this need for faster and faster settlement across multiple networks, but especially across ACH. And again, that need for expertise, that need for understanding, that need for risk and compliance, all of those things are becoming harder and harder to find expertise in that, as well as that really deep expertise that's going to help when we see this transformation really even get bigger.
I'd like to get a better understanding of the proposed amendments. What are they? What are the key proposed amendments that will directly impact originators? And are there any specific implications we can expect?
Yeah, absolutely. So across the new risk framework that Notcha is proposing, there's really impact across the whole network, whether it's a third party or an originator, the RDFI or the ODFI. But specifically, these proposals are going to require everybody in the value chain to have more diligence on the accounts, on the account ownership, particularly with higher volume transactions, higher dollar value transactions. It's going to be critically important that they understand where those funds are coming from, where they're going to, and then when something suspicious is happening, that the receiving institution has an opportunity to reject that inbound money or for the originator to call it back. So it's going to be paramount that they have the tools to validate accounts, validate identities, and to be able to do it in as close to real time as possible.
Yeah. And again, going back to that idea of as close to real time. So the luxury that we have had in terms of a little bit of a delay, a little bit of slowness in the system, and that was considered to be a feature, not a bug. And now that we're beginning to see that go away, that understanding that, yes, there is a faster need or a need for faster verification, the tools need to be faster. Folks that are using the tools need to be better prepared. And I think what's really interesting is just the mention of risk. Risk has become one of those topics that we are hearing more and more about when we talk to financial institutions, when we talk to their partners and technology vendors. That was not a big topic for a considerable period of time. When you think back to the very beginning of sort of the fintech decade, maybe 10 years ago, it was really more about growth. It was about, you know, there was a lot of excitement around just financial technology. Now there is an understanding of, yeah, there are things that the financial system does very, very well. Risk, compliance, governance, fraud, security, all of those things are now becoming more and more important and coming to the forefront. And we're hearing a lot more about the need for risk and risk tools and the things that financial institutions and the financial system has done very, very well. So I think that's a very interesting switch in the last, really the last 12 to 18 months, that prominence in terms of risk and compliance being a talking point or something that we're discussing more.
Yeah, and I think it really kind of comes down to if I were to summarize the risk framework into 3 points, it's really about monitoring across all parties in the value chain, funds recovery tools, and standardizing of information so that individual names, descriptions are standard across the network, that there is an ability to recover funds, and that there is monitoring across that. So I think that that's really what it comes down to across the value chain.
You both spoke about the impacts that we can expect, and I'm sure with that comes a lot of challenges. What challenges can originators anticipate with the proposed amendments?
Sure. So what they're going to have to deal with is, right, you have this speed. People want these funds moved in as close to real time as possible. So striking the balance between good customer service, good throughput, speed, and risk and fraud mitigation is going to be a needle they're going to have to thread very carefully. And they're going to have to strike a balance there. And they're going to need processes, procedures, and tools to be able to do this. And those tools are going to have to work in as near real time as possible so that you're not applying excessive friction to your customer base or to the movement of funds.
Yeah, and that's almost as much art as it is science. I mean, that's one of the things that we've said about security for a really long time is you can make something so absolutely secure, but it's completely and totally useless, or you can make something very, very open, but unfortunately, it's not very secure. And so that balance that you were talking about between customer service and protecting things, making sure that risk is taken care of on one side, but also making sure that customer service and access and all the stuff that we want in terms of payments are available on the other side. It's one of those things that, like you said, it is a balance. And the other thing too is it's not a set it and forget it thing either. It's one of those things that you're constantly having to tweak that, making sure that, you know, are you getting what you need from your fraud, security, and governance and risk? But are you also doing the things that you need from a growth, from a customer service, from a retention standpoint? And that's a challenge. And again, it's one of those things that financial institutions, their partners, everybody is constantly trying to figure out what that right balance is.
Right. And I couldn't agree more, James, that it is an ongoing thing. This is not something you're going to put processes and controls in place and you're good for 5 years, right? These things have to be monitored daily. You've got to see what the new fraud trends are, what's happening today that we weren't seeing 6 months ago, so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's one of those discussions we have a lot in the fraud and security space when we're talking about payments is, you know, bad guys are actually really smart. We like to think of them as being these nefarious people who are, you know, out there doing these bad things. But while they are that, they also are aware of what those trends are. They're aware of what the tools are, and they're trying to get around them all the time as well. So that's the problem is they're constantly working as well.
We talked about the impact. We talked about the challenges. I'd like to talk about the opportunities and the benefits. Are there any opportunities and benefits for originators, you know, stemming from these proposed amendments?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that, as James put it, that art and science of fraud and risk mitigation, there's an opportunity for them to not only improve what they're doing today, but it's an opportunity to help them reduce risk and loss further within their systems. There's opportunities here where these tools that they would apply to these types of transactions can be used in other parts of their business that will also, whether it's at account opening or account closure and throughout a customer life cycle. So those tools that are available in the market can absolutely help them in other parts of the business. And I think that that's a huge opportunity for them to reevaluate many of the systems and processes they have in place today and look for ways to enhance them, make them better, make them faster.
Yeah, and that's hard. You know, a lot of times we think we're going to take a tool and we're going to apply it to a problem. We're going to, especially a digital solution is going to come in and it's going to fix things. And a lot of times you do have to look at those processes, those things that are internal that may have nothing to do with actually the technology or the tool, but you still have to address those. And so it is better to have those tools that are easier to integrate, the partners that are easier to work with, because you are going to have a lot of stuff internally that you have to work on. And I love that idea of, you know, this is not just about fixing one thing. It is once you begin to address it, you can start using that across multiple organizations, processes, and issues. So that's part of this whole evolution of what we're seeing in these tools is, yeah, we can address multiple things, multiple problems and processes.
With that in mind, what would be the top recommendations for originators to prepare for and to adapt to these proposed amendments? Brian, I'll start with you first.
Well, I think this is the right opportunity. When we look at the proposed timeline for when some of these new rules will go into place in late 2024 and then in 2025, this is an opportunity for compliance departments to really go back and evaluate what they're doing today, where they may have gaps, what tools do they have in place today that are going to help address these new rules, or do they need to be looking for something new? And it is in some of the other workshops that we have done, many of our clients tell us that they feel good about where their risk and compliance mitigation is at, but there's more to do. And this is where these areas need to be actually out looking at new solutions and looking at different providers and seeing what's going to best fit their needs, what fits into their technical ecosystem, and what's going to give them the best performance when they're looking to strike that balance between speed and risk.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we're also seeing a recommendation for is be proactive on this. A lot of times when you look at deadlines, when you look at compliance issues, you do okay, I must be done by this date, and you do a work back. This is one of those where you start sooner rather than later. There are issues, there are areas where there may be problems, there may be costs, there may be concerns that need to be worked through that you didn't know, the things, you know, the unknown unknowns. And so it's better to be proactive on this instead of doing that work back from the point where you know you need to be done. Start now, start understanding what those issues are, start looking at what needs to be done from a risk and compliance standpoint and be proactive.
And certainly the technology side of this, right? If you're going to engage with a new solution, you know, you've got to get it into a roadmap. You've got to have resources that can work on it. And then you've got to have time to test it and do proof of concept. So James is right, sooner rather than later.
Thank you both so much for sharing your insights and perspective. And thanks to everyone for tuning in today. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated on the latest Payments Journal episodes. And don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues.